And there's some words from the second letter to the Corinthians, which came to me very strongly when thinking about that. For what we preach is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. And this is coming from Paul, writing to a church which, let's face it, the church at Corinth must have been his biggest headache of all the churches that he founded and was associated with. And here he is saying, I am your servant. And indeed, that's a phrase that crops up in hymns through the ages and an association with that. In the old hymn, which many people here will be familiar with, Christians are jointly addressed as ye servants of God. It's not maybe something that we use in common conversation these days, but let's never forget its truth. We are all servants of God. And a servant is there to serve. Not a slave, not as a slave, but by free choice. And we have all, by exploring the concept of Christianity, by following Christ, by declaring ourselves as Christians, by searching out what Jesus wants us to do as individuals, what we've done is we've all volunteered to take the opportunity to be God's servants. We even know that phrase, it's an archaic one now, going into service. And in generations past, that was the route that many people took for their working lives. And perhaps right through the 20th century, it declined in popularity and in levels of respect. It became an option that people might have looked upon as restrictive and poorly rewarded. But for centuries, being a servant, especially in a big household, meant giving the service of hard work and in return receiving a great reward, being fed good food in abundance, being clothed and housed at the employer's expense, and being protected from many of the trials and dangers that people in other forms of work suffered. The servant was, in a strong household, looked after when sick, cared for in old age, and kept warm enough through the winter. And this came at the expense of very hard work and of giving loyalty to that household. And if we think back to a time when many people starved, many people froze to death every winter, many had rags infested with lice and fleas as their only clothing their whole lives through, and many had no dry shelter at night. Being a servant was a jolly good bargain. Now, service has come to be connected in our 21st century eyes too closely with servile and servitude. And we often look on the idea of being a servant with scorn and with distaste. And for modern people and for modern Christians, being a servant of God is a bit of a moment like that. Well, I don't know. How wrong we are. How wrong can we get? Think about it in terms of military service. Perhaps that's something we can understand more. It's quite funny. If you go back to those days when being a servant was to be held in high regard, to be a member of the armed forces was to be regarded as the dregs of society. Just a little bit of a swappy round, isn't it? You know, it's the old one about What's the line from the Kipling poem? They let a drunk civilian in, but I can't get it to scan. But it's the thin red line of heroes when the drums begin to roll. And it's like they wouldn't let a drunk civilian in. They let a drunk civilian in, but not me, sort of thing. The army was regarded as the dregs of society. We've changed. But perhaps it's something for our modern minds that we can comprehend a bit more easily now. Because our armed forces, our people who go into military service, do so as volunteers, do so as skilled professionals, and are regarded with respect because they risk themselves for our safety. Joining together with a great body of other people who have put themselves into the same service. And we can see pride in that. But I do want us to connect the housemaid image of service and the military end of service. So let's go back to the housemaid end of things, because we are, all of us, declared by being here God's servants. So what does it mean? It means that we have chosen of our own free will to give our loyalty, not to a great house, but to the greatest, to God. We have chosen to put ourselves forward to do the work that he puts our way, to represent him, to wear his livery, and show ourselves to be proud to be his people. And in return, he takes us into his house. He gives us a place at his table and adopts us into his family. So the work that God puts our way, what is this work that he puts our way? Well, sometimes the work that God gives us fits in with our inclinations. Often the work that God gives us uses our talents. But there will also be the work that he needs us to do, even when it doesn't fit in with either of the first two. Because his work can be humble, it can be dirty, it can be repetitive, it can be exalted. But all of it, from the very lowest to the very highest, is equally valued if it fits in with his needs. Just think about this for a moment. How do you, as an individual, serve God now? What are you doing at the moment, in this time, in this year, in this month? What do you do in service to God? Think about, how have you served God in the past? What service will you do in the future? You yourself might be right at this moment in the middle of a very stable time of service. You know what you're doing. You know you're doing the right thing. And you know it's something that you're going to keep on going. You might be in a state of being just about to start something new, or indeed thinking, it is time for me to start a new type of service for the Lord. Or you may be thinking, it is time for me to stop doing that. The time for my service in that role is coming to an end. And please stop being Methodist for a minute, because Trevor Stanethorpe always used to say, and I agree with him wholeheartedly, Methodists are great at starting things, they're great at keeping things going, and they're absolutely rubbish at stopping things and saying, right, okay, that's enough. We all know when there's been a project in a church that we've valued and that has been wonderful and has kept going and has then kept going and has then kept going and has then kept going beyond the point where it should have come to a decent stop. We've all been there. There is no shame in stopping a form of service when it has run its course. Okay, Methodist hat back on. As I said before, there is work that fits in with what we enjoy doing. There is work that fits in with what we're good at doing. And there's work that doesn't go into either of those categories, but it still needs doing. And we're all called at different times in our life to do all three. And that applies to God's service as well as the world's. Do you have a particular talent? Do you have a strength? Do you have a skill? Are you musical like wonderful team that we have active today and others who are active in worship at other times? Do you arrange flowers with style? Can you carve wood? Can you wire a house for electricity or bake a cake that sinks in the middle? Can you build a crib? Can you embroider? Can you welcome a newcomer? Are you touched with the skill of understanding just when someone needs you to listen to them? If you have a skill that you are good at, use it in the service of God. You probably already are. Think of your skills. Do you make a good cup of tea? Oh, very valuable person. Tell them over in your head, and then think, how am I using these skills for God? How could I use them for God? Sometimes we work for God as part of worship, and our skills and talents fit in with the needs of worship. It's not just the musicians and the flower arrangements and all the pretty joyful stuff. We've got the technocrats running the audio and visual stuff. We've got the readers. We've got the stewards who organise and prepare the serves. We have cleaning done in this place to make it wonderful for worship. There's the compilation and printing and emailing of the notice sheet. There is all these jobs and service that we do. The people who count the money are serving God. The ones who arrange the flowers and those who take them out to those people who are particularly in need of some flowers. The welcome team, the people who prepare, pour and clear up the mess after the teas and coffees. And those who lead power source sessions. The banners, we haven't got many up today. I was rather expecting a few more. Lent, Dinah, Lent, think about it, woman. Banners need somebody's skills to put those together. Think of the high days of celebration when the place is amazingly decorated. These are all skills applied for God. I'm sure I've left someone out. I'm really sorry. I apologise. All of these are applied so that we can come and meet and worship the Lord. Working for God, taking place in his church building, for worship. An amazing range of people giving their service, and we bless them for their work. Do you have a skill that you could use in worship? Now, perhaps it's not a particular skill of yours that God is after to support worship. Perhaps it's not something that you're keen on doing or that anyone is keen on doing. Perhaps it's something, as I said, that just needs doing. Now, I'm a teacher, and I'm going to tell you absolutely honestly here. I do not believe that everyone who helps out with power source or with little sparks in the future does so because they have a deep and abiding love of children and a thirst to lead them on in their learning. Sometimes they are there helping because otherwise the burden on the few who are called to that high skill level and for that have that thirst, the burden on them would be too much. They need to be supported. I am by no means convinced that everyone who does the washing up thinks that this is the perfect way to spend their Sunday. But they do it because it needs to be done. And if more offer to share, the burden for each is lighter. Because it's not just about our skills. We have to be pragmatic. It's no good saying in an airy-fairy way, oh, that's all right, someone will come forward who feels called to wash up.
Yeah, right.
Washing up needs doing. Let's get it done. Never think that you're getting in someone else's way by offering to do a worship job, because it ain't happening. We all know that the Lord loves a cheerful giver, and we shouldn't be pressed or pressured or harassed into giving service. However, I do believe that if we just wait for someone else somewhere to speak up and say, I feel so called into a ministry of cleaning, we might be waiting a long old time. The work that God gives his servants changes through our lives according to our abilities and our strengths. Maybe once you were strong enough to move pianos and carry baskets of crockery. Perhaps you're not anymore. There is still work for you to do. Could you give a reading? Could you make a visitor welcome? Perhaps there is a younger person who is just exploring the responsibilities and service that they can offer. And perhaps there is somebody who could encourage someone else to come forward and offer themselves. Could you be an encourager? We overlook so easily the gift that we have to give, quite often, especially if the gift that we have to give is not flashy or not as sparkly as the ones we've enjoyed in the past. But never forget the widow's mite. God values your gift and your service, be it never so small or quiet. Think about what you do and what you could do to support the worshipping life of the church. Come forward, give the skills you have. Worship is such an important part of the service that God puts our way. Worship as a word is, thank you for Google, well, not Google search, but Bible Gateway search. Worship is used in the Bible over 250 times. It's a basic part of the requirements of a Christian life. And we serve the Lord in worship by supporting worship in the work we are called to do and the work we are needed to do. And it's not just in worship that God puts work into our hand. There are plenty of tasks around this building and in the further life and work of our church that God sets up for his servants to do. If you take a look in the Connections magazine, and I haven't looked at it, but I'm quite confident without even looking at it today, if you take a squint around the foyer at the notice board, you will see the phenomenal range of activities and roles of serving God that there are for us to fill. Think of the different parts of this building and the uses to which it has been put, is being put, will be put in the future. The clubs, the network meetings, Cornerstone, Gateway, the work of this church alone, in this building alone, goes on every day of the week. And there are jobs, believe me, that have vacancies where someone is needed. Could it be your skill that God is needing? Could it be your unwilling, unskilled, but needed effort that God is calling? How many meetings have you sat through? I cannot be alone in this. I do not believe I'll be alone in this. I think every church in every land, where somebody says, oh, we really need some volunteers for X. Right, how can we encourage more volunteers for X? And you sit there for an hour and a half where there's a big discussion about getting more, how we could come some creative scheme to get more volunteers for X. And you're sitting there going, just if everybody in the room just did one shift there, we wouldn't actually worry about all these schemes and everything. Discuss it a bit less and everyone do a shift themselves. We wouldn't have this problem in the first place. And also, the meeting would be a bit shorter. Here at Ashbourne, there are a couple of areas, again, without checking in with the people who run them, I will promise you, there's a couple of areas we're always short of people. Cornerstone, Power Source. Because they need a lot of hands to make them function. And anyone who has given their service for either of them knows the sensation that, yes, we are doing God's work here, and yes, I'm not sure I'd choose to do this for fun. But that is the point. God sets our hands to the plough, and sometimes it's not a furrow of our choosing, but one that needs to be dug. A lot of people here today set their hands to that plough, and it's marvellous that they do, for without an army of support, these activities couldn't function. But for every marvellous project we have as a church, there is a cost in washing up and sweeping the floor. In Luke 9, we hear, as they were walking along the road, a man said to him, "I will follow wherever you go." And Jesus challenges the man, "Foxes have dens and birds have the nests, but the Son of Man has no place to call his own." This is the cost, says Jesus. If you follow me, if you choose the worship, if you choose the joy, if you choose the place at my table, you also choose the washing up and the cooking and the cleaning too. The jobs you want and the ones that need doing. And it's not just in this building. The direct work of the church alone goes on beyond this site. Pastoral visiting, house group leaders, house group hosts, cooking cakes for the Cornerstone. All of the groups and all of the activities that we as just one little church support. It's a phenomenal range of service for God. But this is where it gets important to remember. We are invited to put our hands to that plough. We're not tied to it as slaves. We are invited to serve, in the words of Romans 7, to serve in newness of spirit. Now, Paul isn't instructing us to run around frenetically from one church job to another. Now, to be honest with you, we've seen occasions when people have got swallowed up like this. But to serve according to our abilities, not fooling ourselves ever that we're not going to feel the effort, but in newness of spirit, recognising the need that God puts our way. And there we come back to the time when Jesus was in the desert. I have no idea if Jesus was out there for 40 days and 40 nights, because of course in Bible speak that means a long time. Yeah. I have no idea if the devil was a person who actually came and spoke to him, or if it was his own fears and concerns that welled up. But something I do know, the only way we know the story of the time when Jesus was in the desert is because he told it himself to others. There is no eyewitness to give an account. So when his disciples said to him, how do you know? How do you work out what you're supposed to do? What happened to you after you were baptized and you were recognized in front of all of us as God's son? And the way I feel it in my head is that sitting around a campfire or in somebody's house, he says, "Would you know, I had to go off on my own into the desert, and I stayed out there a long time, and I had to think very deeply and listen to God, to what he was calling me to do and what he wasn't calling me to do." And that his experience comes from that. I think it's the only point in the Gospels where we have Jesus completely on his own. And that's a story that he must have told them. That was his experience. And in that time, he chose to serve. He didn't choose to be a lofty ruler, an absolute king. He chose to put his hand to the plough and follow where the furrow took him. We follow Christ by trying to imitate the example that he has set us. And we should celebrate the wonderful things that we do that through as a church and as individuals and as groups. From the prayer support for each endeavour to the talented individuals whose abilities allow us to hit the heights and the grunt work that underpins it all. God calls us all to serve with a musical instrument, with writing a sermon, with screwdriver and electrical cables, with washing up, with listening to people. God calls us all to serve and recognises no difference in the value of any of those jobs. There is no difference for the Lord in the value of the artist and the value of the washer-upper. He appreciates the service of all and challenges all of us equally. Because we love God, we serve him. Because we love God, we serve each other.